Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me as she's been through this entire journey is the one, the only, the extremely patient, Drea Kaufman.
I don't think patient is a term ever used to describe me, so I'll take it. No, as someone pointed out last week's episode, they were super duper looking forward to that episode. I think, you know, it also highlights how many... or how few more chapters we have in this journey. And a lot of people reach out to say what's next. So I think we have a little bit of, you know, it's a bittersweet ending we're wrapping up to. Mm-hmm. But it's good. It's been a very long journey, as you highlight, in a good way.
Yeah. The theme song for Star Trek Enterprise said, it's been a long road getting from there to here. So, and we're...
Or as Journey said, or Boston said, it's
yeah. So, no, it is really exciting. Like I can't wait, you know, to be done. In the sense that it's so much fun to just get to this point. Like everything in this entire series, obviously, has been building up to these last few chapters, and so it's just exciting to finally get there. So, before we do that, of course, don't forget you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you happen to be on Apple Podcasts, give us a star rating review, let people know how you like the show. And in fact, Drea, we do have another new review, and so I would like to thank that person for giving their review and read the review out here, because that's what you get when you give us a review. And so this one says, thank you, 5 stars. As we're closing off this incredible series, I wanted to say how incredibly grateful I am to Matt and Drea. I have had one of the hardest years of my life, and everything Harry Potter has been a bit of an escape. None of my friends or family read the books, so it's so refreshing to have someone be there on the same page with me with all things Harry Potter. Thank you for your time and your perspective on it all. I'm thankful to have been on this journey with you guys. Stay blessed. Love and a grateful fan, Mariah. And you know what, Mariah? We are just super glad to have been here for you. And I would say, you know, it's been definitely a terrible year, I think, for everyone. But we're excited to have been any kind of happiness to anyone with that.
And you know, I really appreciate feeling heard. I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, and especially in the last year. I think it's been particularly hard without being able to sort of congregate safely and find that sense of fellowship. So I'm really happy to be a part of that virtually for you all. So I'm glad to hear that we could, to Matt's point, be a small bright spot in a really challenging couple of like 18 months or so.
And a strange, I think, you know, in so many ways, how I think this series, Harry Potter, is a great reflection on how we make it through difficult situations. You know, like every year Harry's thrown into the fire almost dies.
In some way,
you know?
Shape, or form. Sometimes literally thrown into the fire.
So dragon fire. So it's it is really neat. You know, this series, I think, does a great job with that. And that's where we're going to be with the chapter this week. But of course, you know, make sure you subscribe so you get the podcast as soon as it drops, as we're wrapping everything up. You can also find us online at Join Nerd Party on Twitter, or on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty, nerdparty.com, where you can check out all the shows we're doing. Plus, of course, you can send us a email over at nerdparty.com/contact. So we're in Chapter 34, The Forest Again. And it's really interesting to me because as Harry comes to after being in the memories, all of these memories, and of course Voldemort's last, you know, proclamation there, Harry understands everything now. And it's this strange realization in some ways, like all of the frustration he's had with Dumbledore, all of the frustration he's had through this whole book of trying to figure everything out, it all clicks in his brain. Like everything finally makes sense as to why Dumbledore did the things he did with Harry, that, you know, even Snape, like everything about his life, and this realization that neither of them is going to survive. Like, it's not about whether he survives or Voldemort survives. It's about the fact that both of them have to go, because a part of him, you know, Voldemort lives in him. And that how do you comprehend the idea that, no, you were basically born to die, you know, in some ways. So it's just like we were talking about a little bit this before recording, but this chapter is just all the emotion of what Harry is feeling as he is walking as a lamb to the slaughter. Like, there's no choice.
I find it so interesting because I think there, so to people like you and I, right, Matt, there isn't a choice, right? Like, the right thing to do is to die, right? Like, you, that there isn't a choice for us. But when you listen to the prophecy, there is a choice, right? Like, they both could die, right? Like, they could he could find a way where Voldemort and him die. But he knows the situation well enough to know that Voldemort would never make that sacrifice, right? Voldemort would never kill himself would never sacrifice himself the way that Harry is going to, right? And I think that's so interesting. And I think it's a good, we've talked a lot about how they're very similar in their upbringing and beliefs, which now kind of makes sense, right? Some of those parallels, they both can talk to snakes, make sense why. But I think this is that moment where we talk a lot about the decisions that set them apart. And this is the way they interpret that is what sets them apart. Harry says that there's no choice. And Voldemort says, well, he has to, the other one has to die. I'm not going to die. Right. I think it's just so interesting when you think about that and think about it as they're two sides of the same coin. They're going to choose the opposite interpretation whenever there's the opportunity, they're going to choose the opposite of each other. Like you had said, we talked a lot about how this is just a very emoting chapter full of all the feels, and I will admit to tearing up a little bit, even though I've read this half a dozen times. I still sort of teared up as the chapter progresses. You know, I can relate and would probably feel the same way. Harry says at one point, like, there will be no goodbyes. There will be no explaining myself. I'm going to go quietly into the night and no one's going to know. And I think I would probably do the same thing if I'm honest, because I wouldn't want to have to defend myself. I wouldn't want the sort of pity looks you get from, you know, I wouldn't want to feel the burden of dealing with the emotional response of my loved ones. I would rather they have that without me. It's almost a selfish thing, but for me, it's like, I would do the same thing. I would totally just wander off and not tell anybody. Well, sure. I mean, I'd stop and tell my friend to kill a giant snake, but I mean, for the most part, I would just wander off without telling anybody.
You know, it's such a fascinating thing. And what I find most interesting about this whole thing, we were talking again a little bit before we were recording it, but one of the things that's,
we should. You'd think we'd learn after 4 years. But
you know, it just happens. But so one of the things that is really fascinating about this is where J.K. Rowling's cards begin to show this chapter as to the belief system to which she holds. She's talked about this before in interviews, you know, that, you know, she grew up in the Church of Scotland, and it's always been difficult for her to believe, but if anybody kind of wants to know what she believes, it's worked out here at the end of Harry Potter. And there's an interesting thing here where, you know, Harry is, in many ways, there's this predestination paradox, right? That she's been playing out throughout the entire series. And to me, it's been one of the best outworkings of what predestination means in literature, to how that works. Like, Dumbledore knew that Harry would not say no. And so Harry was always going to be the one in the end, like, you know, because of all the things that have happened. And it works out even more so in the next chapter where we finally have the conversation, but spoiler alert. And it's just so interesting though to see that work out. And you know, Harry walks kind of willingly into the forest, like you said. Like, there is a hesitation. He doesn't want to die, right? Like, and there's obviously the links with the Garden of Gethsemane and Jesus and, like, not wanting to die, but he's going to do it anyway, you know? Like, so there's all of these beautiful things. And, you know, I really liked the small moments that we did get in the castle before he leaves, you know, and he's got the cloak on and he almost runs into Neville, who's helping Oliver Wood, which is so much fun to see him back, except that Oliver Wood is carrying Colin Creevy, who's died. And you're just like, oh, it's so heartbreaking, you know, like,
especially when she describes him so tiny in death. You're like, oh,
it's terrible. Tears. It's terrible. Yeah.
Oh my God.
This chapter definitely, you know, makes me cry every time too. But I love that, you know, he talks to Neville. Like, he needs somebody else other than Ron and Hermione who know, because the one thing that Dumbledore didn't plan for was that there would still be one Horcrux left. Then it's Nagini. And so, what we have here is even though Harry's going to go die, there's still going to be a job left to do, and he's not going to be there to do it. And so he needs somebody else other than Ron and Hermione to know what needs to be done. And he tells Neville, scares him to death first, but then tells him, you know, the snake, that snake needs to be killed. And if Ron and Hermione are busy, it needs to be done.
Yeah, I like how he hesitates. He doesn't want to say killed because, you know, he knows he's going to his death. He doesn't need to take the time and the emotional impact of talking about his framley. I love that term, by the way, framley, dying, right? So, you know, he has to put it in a way that doesn't invoke that emotional response from him, right? So he says, like, if they're busy, he kind of struggles to come up with why they wouldn't be able to kill the snake. But yeah, I think it's so much. I think Harry's response in this entire chapter is something that we can all learn from, right? Like, there are so many things that happen to us in life that are scary, but that doesn't mean that we can't be brave and do the right thing. Like, bravery is not the absence of fear. It's the act of doing the right thing when you're afraid. Like, regardless of how you're feeling, right? And so I think that's exactly what Harry does here, is you're never painted as this sort of, you know, superhuman ability to be unfeeling, right? Like, he's not void to what's happening. He just knows and accepts the fact that that's the right thing to do, and he's made his decision, and he's going to do what he feels needs to happen, even if it's terrible for him and scary, right? And he, you know, he is planning that this is all that life will have for him, right? Like, this is it, and he has to make that decision quickly and amongst a lot of chaos. And I mean, we all aren't fighting giant magical battles for the existence of our race, but, you know, we all are in the situation where we have to make a quick decision that's scary and be brave. And I think this is a good reminder, especially when you talk about this being a young adult book, right? Like, this is a good message to young adults that, like, it's scary and that's okay. You can do it. You can still do it. And the people around you are there to help you, which we get with him opening the snitch.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with you, and I think, you know, there's that really beautiful moment where, you know, he's seeing Ginny, who's helping this young girl who's scared, and there's this moment, like, he would want to go home, and yet he is home, like, Hogwarts is his home, and just like Snape, and just like Voldemort, he was that abandoned boy who had no other place to go, who had found a home at school, you know, who had found a family, you know, that he did not expect, you know? And I think there's such a beauty to that. And I love that, you know, as he goes to walk out to the forest, he's walking past Hagrid's house. He's kind of remembering, you know, some of the times there, you know, with Norbert and all the craziness that happened with Hagrid at his house. And, you know, then he remembers, as he sees the fact that there are Dementors swirling around, he remembers that he has the Snitch and he realizes what's in there. And so he kisses it and he says, you know, I'm about to die. And it's the resurrection stone. And when he turns that stone, it gets me every time when his parents show up. And so do Lupin and Sirius. It's just so gorgeous that they're there for him. And this is a moment, too, where she really is kind of, I think, alluding to some scripture in the book of Hebrews in the New Testament. It talks about having a great cloud of witnesses that have gone before you. And that they're still there and that they're cheering you on basically in heaven. And this idea, like that's what he's got. And that the Dementors, as he's walking, do have no effect on him. That there's this shield that he has. And it's just such a beautiful thing, you know, to have his parents be able to talk to him and tell him how proud they are of him. You know, gosh, the conversation he has with Lupin is just absolutely heartbreaking about, you know, the fact that Teddy won't get to know his father. That in the end, Teddy is just like Harry at this point. And it's just, you're immediately, you know, the last chapter with so much in it, but this chapter really allows you that space to be smacked upside the head with all of the emotion and all of the feels. And damn if I don't have all of them, even right now.
Yeah, I mean, taking this from not a religious perspective, there's still so much to take away, right? Like not having the frame of reference that you're talking about. Even so, I think from a different perspective, it says the same message essentially, right? Like that those who have left are never truly gone, right? They still always cause an impact, and though their lives are, you know, like you're still loved and supported even after they go, right? Like maybe you can't have quite the level of conversation with them that we had in this book. It wasn't quite so literal, but you know, like the fact that those are the exact people he needed to hold his hand as he made this decision, like says something. And it says something that Dumbledore is not among them, right? He needed emotional love and care from his family, right? Which to him are the four people who presented themselves, right? So it's intense. And I did like that one of his big fears at the beginning of the chapter, he just straight up asks it here, right? Like, does it hurt? Because mm-hmm. that was when we start the chapter, that was like one of the first two or three thoughts he has is like, is it gonna hurt? I don't know what it's gonna be like. What do I prepare for, right? And you know, they have like a little conversation about it. Like, no, it's like falling asleep, and they're like, no, he wants this over quickly. Like, he's not gonna drag this mm-hmm. out. Like, you don't have anything to worry about. It you know, it also shows like you need to allow yourself to be vulnerable and ask those questions when you are supported, right? Like, what's he got to lose,
right?
Right? Yeah. Like, they might say, well, I don't know, or yes, it's going to hurt. Like, is that really going to change his mind? No, he at least now knows what to expect, mm-hmm. right? And I think the way he kind of, I don't know, the way that this confrontation, if you will, plays out in the book feels more real than the movie. The movie adds some sort of like, it almost has like a grandeur to it, right? He steps in to this big clearing in the field and it's like his big stance, right? And in this, he just kind of is himself, right? Like he's humbly there and he's almost a little bit snarky, like we've come to love. And it's like over.
Yeah.
It just happens.
No, I really like the way it does happen, like you said, you know, that it's over very quickly. I think the most important thing that we get here was the picture of, you know, Lucius and Narcissa and Malfoy and them all looking very defeated and, you know, kind of not a part of this. And of course, Hagrid being there, he's tied to a tree and he's screaming, no, 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 you can't do this. And there's such a beauty in the fact that Harry's last thought is Ginny. And in many ways, you know, you can realize the reason why. Why? Because this is the life that he wanted. He wanted the life with her. But he's giving up his life so she can have a life. And it's just, it's so wonderfully beautiful to watch this happen and to read this. And, you know, and then it's done. You know, and we have the next chapter, King's Cross. And so, but I think this, I think one of the things that this chapter does, even though it's short, it proves how well she's written this story, that even after I've read it, probably at least 7, 8, 9, who knows how many times, that I could still be this emotional about these characters and what happened in this chapter, even though I know what happens. And I think part of that is because, and for me personally, it is because she's telling a story to which is an allusion to a greater story, to which I hold to be true and means more to me than anything else. And I think that's one of the reasons why this story has so much power, is because we all respond to a story of extreme self-sacrifice for the benefit of others. And there's nothing more powerful than that type of story. That's what our greatest heroes do, right? They sacrifice themselves. And it's the best message. It's still the best message.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's universally relatable, and you can take the pieces from it that resonate the most with you, right? You can take the story as she intends it and as, you know, you're referring to here. But even if that's not what you subscribe to, there's still so much to take away from it, right? It's powerful without being, you know, preachy, right? Like, which is nobody, even people who believe in the highest power and are religious, don't necessarily want to be preached at. So, you know, like, at least not by the
sure.
book or the, without choice, right? Like, there's context for that. But, you know, I think it's powerful. And I think the one thing we skimmed over a little bit that stood out to me in this chapter, too, that straight up doesn't exist in the movie, is that we get Voldemort kind of questioning himself, too, right? Which the movie character would never show that kind of weakness. And it's a little out of character to show how surprised he is, because he even says, like, I truly believed he was going to come when they all thought Harry wasn't coming, right? He's like, I could have sworn he would have come. And he's sort of taken aback himself and confused why his grand evil master plan didn't play out the way he thought it did. And then it did, right? But not for the reasons he thinks it is, right? He hasn't necessarily won with this sort of arrogant feeling he does. But yeah, I think it's interesting. It's a full chapter, but not a long chapter. And important things happen, but not a lot of things happen. It's not like the last one where it's super dense. This is one very, very important thing that happens. And us having to kind of, it's like when you're in a important conversation, everyone gets very quiet and there's just this silence. It's kind of what this chapter is. You've been given this huge chunk of information at the end of the last chapter. Most of this chapter is just silence. And what do you do with that? And then a big thing right at the end that we'll now have to go into and process what just happened in the next chapter.
You know, I definitely agree. And I think it just shows her prowess as an author. Like, she knows exactly what she's doing with this chapter. She knows exactly what she's doing. And I think she needed to give you all of that information at in the last chapter, and this one is the emotional gut punch. Like, just legitimately, it's just, it's like somebody just punched you in the face. So, yeah. Yep. So, I love it, and I cannot wait. You know, we were discussing the fact that there are only three things left. There are two chapters and an epilogue, and then we'll have our wrap-up episode, and we'll be done. So, it's insane that that's the case. But Drea, if anybody wants to cry along with you here on social media or see what else you've got going on, where can they find you?
Yes, if you want to bring some tissues to the table here, or if you want to talk about Matt and I's last conversation outside of Outpost, which he invited me to join him on the 602 Club, so that will probably be live by then too. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you could find me all over social media under MattRushing02. Of course, I'm here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, as every week we talk about Star Wars, which is a lot of fun. On the TFM network, of course, like Drea said, doing the 602 Club, which has been a blast. We did just cover together with Christy Super 8 by J.J. Abrams, so that, go check that out. It was a great conversation about that film, and it was super fun to have Drea back there. And
it was 80s. Yeah, riffic.
It was. And
or I guess 70s.
Both,
riffic.
Both. You know, because it's mirroring both. But you could also find me there in that same feed doing Snyder Cuts with John Mills, as we talk about every single thing Zack Snyder's directed. And by this point of this episode dropping, his Justice League will be out and everybody will have seen it and we will have talked about it. So you can listen to that and check that out. You can also find me doing two other shows there. One is called The Orb and the other is Literary Treks. The Orb's about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and then Literary Treks is about the books and the comics of Star Trek. But thank you so much for checking your Outpost.
Mr. Man.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.